Okay. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the 529 Emergency Preparedness Discussion Net, courtesy of the WA7ABU 529 repeater. This is Kilo Golf 7 Golf Delta Bravo. My name is Brett, and I'm at control for today, February 2nd, 2021, Groundhog Day.
This is the WA7ABU repeater.
This net meets each Tuesday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. local time on 145.29 megahertz. This is a designated emergency frequency, so we'll break if any real emergency occurs. Our alternate frequency is 145.19 with a tone of 100. We appreciate those who stand by and allow us to have a clear frequency for the next hour as we discuss emergency preparedness. We'll have a discussion tonight a little bit about auxiliary communications, and we'll also go over the quick overview of our COVID-19 pandemic numbers, which are looking good. And anyway, then we'll going to also address your topics and ideas as well, because I want to get some ideas about auxiliary communications and what people are doing out there with your radios and plans for communicating in an emergency. Okay, all amateur operators are welcome to participate in the discussions tonight. This is directed net, so when you check in, please identify with your call sign slowly and phonetically, and also give me your name and location to be recognized by net control. Let's see if there's anybody out here tonight on the EchoLink system who'd like to check in. Let's do EchoLink users first. I'm not hearing any EchoLink users. All right, let's take general check-ins for the emergency preparedness net.
Kilo India 7 Foxtrot Whiskey Hotel, Alan. Kilo India 7 Foxtrot Whiskey Papa, Jennifer, South Salem.
Good evening. This is Kilo 7 Alpha Romeo Tango, Art and Canby.
Whiskey 7, Victor Hotel November, Frank in Lebanon.
Kilo Echo 7, Oscar Lima Uniform Paul, Northeast Salem.
Kilo Echo 7, Papa Charlie Zulu, Jerry, Kaiser Flood Lake area.
Okay, let's pause there. We had a little double there. Jerry won the double. That was Kilo Echo 7, Papa Charlie Zulu. And who else was trying to get in the same time as Jerry?
That was me. Kilo Juliet 7, November Uniform X-Ray, Crittenden in Salem.
Okay, well, you got it resolved there. Thanks, Crittenden. That's Kilo Juliet 7, November Uniform X-Ray. And let me get through the rest of the group that checked in before you. We had Paul, Kilo Echo 7, Oscar Lima Uniform. And I think, Paul, I'm going to talk a little bit more, and I appreciate your help on this, talking about auxiliary communications and maybe some ideas we can get some, for auxiliary communications units and practice and things like that, as we were discussing last night. That was a good discussion. We can bring it up with the general public here. Before Paul, we had Frank, Whiskey 7, Victor Hotel November, Art, Kilo 7, Alpha Romeo Tango, and then Alan and Jennifer started us off, Kilo India 7, Foxtrot Whiskey Hotel, and Kilo India 7, Foxtrot Whiskey Papa. Who else would like to check in for the emergency prep net?
This is Kilo Echo 7, Golf Bravo Kilo, John and Kaiser.
Kilo 7, Romeo Tango Lima, Rick in Salem, Mobile Salem.
Okay, we've got a pause there again because we've got a little double there. Rick won the double, Kilo 7, Romeo Tango Lima. John was checking before him there, which was Kilo Echo 7, Golf Bravo Kilo. But then we had somebody mobile who doubled. Who was that?
Well, can't beat the base station and the mobile. Kilo 1, Victor, India, November, Kevin, Mobile, Salem.
Okay, there's Kevin. Good. Well, I got the mobile part. I probably, if I just heard like two words, I would have recognized Kevin's voice. Sorry. Actually, you come out very good from your mobile there. Kilo 1, Victor, India, November. Thank you for joining us. Anybody else for the emergency prep net?
Kilo India 7, Kilo Papa Foxtrot, Kevin Salem.
Hey, there's Tim, Kilo India 7, Kilo Papa Foxtrot. Tim and John were just our CTR meeting, our club meeting, which we did on Zoom right prior to this. So, anyway, thank you for joining us there, Tim. Who else is out there for the emergency prep net? And hello, Brett. WA7ABU, and boy, CTR Club really has that planned. You got to finish your meeting in time to go off somewhere else. That's what we ought to do for the ERES meeting. Okay, well, let's see. There's Dan, Whiskey Alpha 7 Alpha Bravo Uniform, and Richard, Whiskey 0 Echo Delta Foxtrot. Now, Nate's very organized, actually. He figures these things out pretty well. And with John's aid there, they scheduled the meeting starting at 5:45, and then the people kind of were trickling in there up till 6, and then Nate had a presentation, and they had a little bit of, questions and answers and talking about a few things, and we're done. So anyway... so it helps to have a little presentation that you're going to go over that get on that everybody has to shut up and get through it. And Nate did a good job on there. He'll probably check in too. Again, welcome, Dan. Anybody else for the emergency prep net? Okay, let's see. Well, we can pause here and we can do some announcements for the net. Anybody have any announcements tonight? Maybe Dan? Well, I guess I can do the repeater announcement that we normally do. Again, this is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo, your net control. So, repeater announcement. So, Tuesday, that's today, we've had the youth net earlier today, 5:30. That's the time for the youth net, and it's lots of fun. They go pretty quickly. They're done in a half an hour also, although today was even shorter. I think it's because Josie forgot her joke book tonight. So, that's the other thing we could do is just do jokes. But when you run out of jokes, then you got to end the net early. Anyway, we have our net. Monday night is the Heritage Net. Don't forget that. I didn't get to hear it last night, but apparently they had a good discussion of communications during the Vietnam War, and I kind of wanted to hear that. Wednesday night is our Slow Scan TV Net. That's Dan, are you going to change the time of that? Was that the discussion? Are you listening? So I heard Richard. Maybe Richard, you listen pretty well. Was there a discussion about changing the time of the 8 o'clock closed scan TV net to a different time? Okay, so tomorrow night we will have the Slow Scan TV at 8, but I guess that's part of our announcements is that it is being considered, and I know there's at least 4 of you guys that have checked in tonight that do Slow Scan TV, or 5 maybe actually, got Frank and Richard and Jennifer and Alan and Art, that's just, 4 or 5 people anyway already, and Dan. What do you think? You want to do your slow scan at 7? I guess that's you can let Dan know, or I guess you could shout out if you wish at this point in time. Okay, well anyway, slow scan TV, 8 o'clock tomorrow night, but maybe 7 o'clock in the future if people would prefer that. So it's going to, you know, I think Dan just wants to make sure everybody's happy and has plenty of time to do. I know it can go pretty late sometimes because I listen once in a while, decode it. All right, let's see. Tomorrow night is our, Thursday night. That was the night we had. Thursday night is the is the mesh network discussion net, and Saturday night, of course, is our swap net. Didn't have a lot of items for sale in the swap net, but I wanted to make sure that people know that we do have this WA7ABUgroups.io page, and if you're not a member of that, you should be. And Dan just put up a very nice PDF document with the silent key items for sale that he got from KF6FYD. At least it's part of the items that we had collected, and it's got good pictures and things of the items on that. So we talked about that before on the SwapNet, that's a place that if you do, you know, can't make it for the SwapNet, put some that's what it's for, you know, put things up that you found out about that you want to share with people, questions you have. And you can put things up for sale, too, or say, hey, does anybody have a whatever, you know, that all is fair game. But 7 o'clock on Saturday is when we normally do that. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. Were there any other announcements for the net tonight? Anybody else want to check in before I go through, start our overview of COVID for the day here?
W7NAT.
There's Nate. Welcome to Whiskey 7, November Alpha Tango. Nate just gave us a good report on what all those little numbers mean on your solar report. When you look at the solar report, what's a solar index and what's a A index and K index? Solar flux and all those things. So, very good. Anybody else want to check in for the emergency prep net?
November 7, Uniform Quebec Sierra.
Okay, I got you there. That's Jack, apparently. November 7, Uniform Quebec Sierra. Thank you for joining us this evening. Anybody else? Okay, so I want to start one other announcement, which I get the Marion County Sheriff's Office bulletin here, and this is kind of a sad thing, but it is an important one that's important for emergency preparedness or any kind of, you know, we have our obviously this is the winter, people need heat, you know, to right now I guess they just announced that they very unfortunate, but in Salem currently a bunch of it was a family, two people and their pets, who perished in their fifth-wheel trailer parked on State Street, east of Salem, 5700 block, and they perished because they were using a propane heater indoors, and they died of carbon monoxide poisoning. So, carbon monoxide, invisible gas, you don't know it's there, and you just stop breathing. And it unfortunately killed a man and his 17-year-old daughter and their pets. So very, very sad. Do not use propane space heaters indoors unless it was designed, you know, for that purpose. There are some, Kevin can tell us about, that have a vent to the outside that can be used. But your standard propane heater that's designed to be used in a shop or outdoors, you need to have ventilation. They will suck up the air and turn it to carbon monoxide. Any comments on that?
W7NAT.
Go ahead, Nate.
Yeah, it's one of those odorless, colorless gases that gives us trouble, like carbon monoxide.
All Okay, well, anyway, that the bulletin goes on to say that there are at least 430 accidental deaths due to carbon monoxide poisoning each year. So, you know, compared to other things that we're going to talk about tonight, it's not going to sound like very many, but, you know, it's just it's a tragic thing that could be prevented. And so, you know, standard propane heater doesn't work, and it's surprising that these people were actually in a fifth wheel. But unfortunately, maybe their fifth wheel heater didn't work. But things that are designed for RVs, you know, bring the air in, you know, from the outside, and they exchange the exhaust gas goes outside as well. So they, you know, they. When you light a propane heater, you know, they work really well. They're nice and warm, and you fire them up, and they're, you know, use the cylinder, and they work. But no, they it takes oxygen to burn, and it produces carbon monoxide, and unfortunately, that you can't breathe. And you know, these people probably were asleep, and they didn't even realize it. Anyway, that's a sort of a safety message, but it is important to realize that when you know in the winter weather. Be prepared for cold and for power outages, but if you have to be careful. If you have the ability to put carbon monoxide detectors in your home, that's another thing that can help. It's interesting because they're like smoke alarms, but they go off. They're usually put near the floor, and they have battery operated ones. But very important. I don't know why they didn't have one in their RV. That should have gone off and made a huge noise. Another good idea to make sure you have carbon monoxide alarms in places where you're going to use wood stoves or any kind of combustibles indoors. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo.
K1GIN comments.
Yeah, go ahead, Kevin. I know you've had a good kind of experience with propane things, but you have to have the right one, don't you?
Yeah, that's correct, Brett. The ones that I use are actually the only ones that are actually approved for indoor use. They have oxygen sensors on them, and when oxygen is depleted, then it shuts them off. I don't always rely on that because that is one of those things that is oxygen depletion doesn't necessarily shut off with carbon monoxide, which is your deadly killer. But you can't always rely on those just run-of-the-mill $10 carbon monoxide detectors either. If you're in a very small space, it takes. If you look at the amount of carbon monoxide needed for how long, it's staggering. It's deadly amounts for 45 minutes before the alarm goes off on some of those units. Now, there's other ones that are better. I highly recommend looking. But mounting those really close to, very close to your, anything of that you're using for heat there, your combustible, and lower than your face. Honestly, it's heavier than oxygen and air, so it will lay on the bottom and fill up from the bottom up. So definitely needs to be checked, probably twice as often as your smoke detector. You just never know. And that's one of those things that will kill you, not wake up in a choke, you know, from smoke. So either way, just those things you got to watch for, too, and it's very sad to hear that that those people had perished in that RV, because I have used many propane heaters, but the ones that are proper equipment for what I do, and then, of course, a carbon monoxide detector considerably lower than my face to the ground, so... Something we all got to think about if we use something like that. K1VIN.
Okay, yeah, good comments there, Kevin. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. Now, Kevin does a lot of cold weather camping, and so he's, you know, and he camps in his vehicle and things like that. But, you know, it's obviously we have a trade-off between doing something we want to do, and doing it safely, So, we think that when we're, we can use some of these items that are designed for outdoor use. Like, there's nothing wrong with using a propane heater, if you're sitting outdoors, on a deck and you want to just warm up the spot you're sitting, that's fine. It's not going to accumulate. But, yeah, you can't use combustible-type heat in a closed room. It's not going to work, and that includes your garage, too, And if you're sitting in there for a while, like you said, it accumulates at the low level. It's a heavier-than-air gas, and it can just sort of fill up, and you may not even realize that it's happening. And, you just kind of get sleepy, and that's it. It's important to remember. Are there any other comments on that before we move on to our little COVID report here? Okay. Well, anyway, we're doing, I want to go to the COVID news. This is Kilo Golf 7 Golf Delta Bravo. Again, what's nice is by going over this each weekend, I know we're all tired of it, right? But, we have to keep an eye on the trend. And the thing is that the trend is doing better now than it was. We had plenty of time with it, right around, we were really kind of worried that beginning of December, we were not doing well. We were on the way up on our cases, our hospitalization, everything was just looking really bad. And it took a little dip, which was good, and then it started to come back up again. The little dip was around the end of December, and then it rose up again. Yeah, so again, we're sort of thinking, well, what happened with that? I don't have an explanation for Oregon, but our numbers actually have now come back down again. So we're doing better, okay? On all indices, we're doing better. We're down in terms of the numbers of people. Positive test rates, 4.2%, positivity rate versus we had back to beginning of January was 8.7. So you have that rate. Our daily testing, we're not testing as many people. We tend to test people with symptoms. There may be fewer people with symptoms. So that's good. Hospitalization down to 262. If you remember, I was, telling you guys I was worried because we were over, 500 in mid-December. So, again, that hospitalizations come down, and accordingly, the numbers in the ICU and the ventilator use go down with it. So that's good news. That means we kind of got over that hump. That's really, really good news. Daily deaths is, again, down. It's gone up a little bit. We might still see a little bit of a hangover from that that hump that we had in, remember, it follows the hospitalization hump by another 2 weeks. But we probably are on our way to doing better, okay, right now. So that's good news. And I think everybody needs to continue to do what they're doing, and maybe we can get these numbers to level out. So any comments on the daily statistics? Another thing I mentioned, we said we have administered 407,869 doses of vaccine. So that's good. Our risk levels are still extreme. And unfortunately, when you look at their county by county stuff, again, probably everybody's listening to me is listening from an at-risk county, unless you're down in Lane County. So it's too early to take those masks off. We've got to keep the masks on. We've got some variants that are arriving that seem to be more transmissible, but our numbers are doing better. So, KP7 GDB, any questions or comments about COVID statistics these days?
K1VIN.
Okay, got a little bit of double there. Was that NAT? Was that Nate and Kevin? Let me just confirm that.
Roger.
Yeah, just a quick question because I'm going to be out here in a second. Brett.
Okay, so since Kevin won the double, I'll let Kev go ahead, Kevin. I know you got to do something. Go ahead.
My question is, what makes this new strain more transmissible than the others? Just a quick question.
Okay, they don't have a good explanation for that yet. There's the mutations are happening in the spike proteins, and it's unclear yet. We don't have that information as to why it's more transmissible, just that it is. So all I can tell you is that they have a different form, a different sequence of the spike protein amino acids, and we don't know yet why it's more. Does it bind better? Does it, you know, float differently? Does it aggregate, you know, smaller particles? We don't know. Okay, but it's a natural selection process. So that if you think about it this way, that the virus has no intent. It is a, you know, they're just, they have these random mutations, okay? And if you imagine that you had all these different sort of, you know, different molecules floating around, the ones that work are the ones that are going to give and reproduce themselves, you know, tend to outcompete the ones that don't work. They just, because they're going to go, as long as the virus keeps getting transmitted, a mutated virus that does a better job is eventually going to take over, and that seems to be what's happening. But when they compare the sort of the R rate or the infectivity rate, it seems like it is higher now with these new mutants, and it's also replacing the other ones. So, but as far as what makes it do that, we don't know yet. Okay, so Nate, did you have a question or comment?
Yeah, one thing that bothers me is Joette's mother died of flu, just regular flu, in one of these old people's homes. And, you know, the way some of these people in power say, like the situation in New York where they put these people that tested positive into old people's homes so they can be taken care of. Well, the excuse is people die. That's all he says. People die.
Okay, so well, it's interesting, you know. I mean, if you're asking, is this worse than the flu? Yes, it's worse than the flu. That we do have numbers on. People are dying at a higher rate, and the ones in nursing homes are still dying faster than the general public. So, but it's easier to kind of find that in a nursing home where you have a setting of people that are all confined together, so they don't leave. But they're not responsible, the nursing home people are not responsible for spreading the illness. You know, that's not where it's coming from, right? So when we see an outbreak somewhere, it isn't that is what's happening to cause the pandemic. That's just a way of easily reporting a large number of people. When you start seeing everybody get sick, they just reported today that they had one of the jails got, you know, a bunch of 80 people or so got sick in the jail, you know. So it's real easy to pay attention to something like that, but that's still only 80 people. What we're more worried about is that the people who are, you know, traveling around the world, you know, going places and you know, the numbers of people who carry the virus that may not even have symptoms. That's what's spreading it. So, we've got to work on still getting it under control. And Paul sent me a nice thing, and I wanted to go over this a little bit. It was a great article about what good is the vaccine doing? Is the vaccine doing any good? And you know, had some nice numbers in it. It was from the New York Times over the weekend. Actually, maybe Paul's like to comment on it because he's the one that sent it to me. But it was sort of the good news part of it. We always focus on the bad news. Paul, KE7, hello, you. Do you want to tell us quick why you said what struck you on that article that you wanted to mention?
KE7, hello, you. I don't have it right here. Go ahead.
Okay, sends me this thing that says excellent vaccine news, okay? Well, anyway, it's what this article says is, you know, basically the key fact is all five vaccines with public results have eliminated COVID-19 deaths. That's the thrust of this news, okay? So it's eliminated the deaths for all five vaccines that we have out there right now. Okay, so ultimately they said, what do we care about? You know, we have to, for most people, they're, you know, the fact that the vaccine prevents you from getting a serious illness or death, you know, that's individually what you want it to do. Okay, now, and then they throw out some example data of what had happened. You know, if you take 75,000 people, you know, who, you know, which is actually kind of the numbers of people that have been involved in the five vaccines from Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca, Novavax, and Johnson & Johnson. You take those 75,000 people who actually participated, and if we didn't, and you just look at the results of them, okay? How would did it matter to those 75,000 people to even be part of that? Okay, so it says, standard group of 75,000 American adults, that would have, 150 of those people would have died, and several hundred would have gone to the hospital. Okay, so the vaccines basically reduce those numbers to zero, and nearly zero according to the research. So, and they say typical flu season kills between 5 and 15 out of those 75,000 people and hospitalizes more than 100, so in comparison to the flu. And that still can happen, still can get the flu. But at any rate, the vaccines are effective at doing what they need to do to protect you from getting a serious illness or dying from it. That's the important thing. We don't know yet what the vaccines do in terms of actually how well they're going to stop the spread of the pandemic. You know, that's, again, why we have to work hard at trying to keep people still doing all the great things that we're doing to stay safe, wearing the mask, staying away from closed spaces and not, you know, hanging out in restaurants and, anyway, taking it seriously, like you all have been doing, and Oregon's been doing a good job. So I guess that was the main thing, is that yes, the vaccines are good news. They're not enough people getting the vaccine yet to make it go away. That's the second part. You know, we kind of would like it to all make it go away, but we are working. The next problem is how do you get those shots in people's arms? And those are the things that are evolving that we're starting to hear bad news about that too. But you know, my perspective is that we're going to ramp up and get better at it. You know, the good thing is also that even with variants that are coming up that seem to be maybe more, you know, it's less effective. They're still effective, okay? And for example, Moderna has already said that they are going to try to make a booster vaccine against the South African variant because it's least effective against that one. But it's still a good vaccine against the South African variant, you know, so it's not as high as it is against the, you know, the 90% thing. You know, it's like 50%. But still, you know, it's a good thing, right? So they might make if we run into problems like this, they're going to synthesize new vaccine boosters. So eventually, and this is my opinion, that we will probably end up getting, you know, a mixture kind of vaccine thing, probably annually, that we'll have to see how that plays out, like we do with the flu. It's a mixture of different vaccines against different strains of the flu. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo.
Red, WA7ABU.
Dan, go ahead, please.
It just seems odd how it's so rough to vaccinate everybody in the U.S. Apparently, we've only been vaccinating maybe 1% for the flu or something like that, because typically I get mine at random from somewhere around October, November. while visiting the doctor at a normal visit or going down to the pharmacy or something like that, any number of ways. And it's I always get it, but it's kind of random where I get it. And random, it seems that those around me, I don't really notice that they're really getting it. So I wonder what percentage of people actually get the ordinary flu shots every year. And is this going to ramp up on the third or fourth type of COVID shot? Are they going to be able to produce the vaccine quicker? Because it really appears that the biggest slowdown is really the unavailability of mass quantities of vaccine, WA7ABU.
Okay, yeah, Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. Well, they're, you know, point well made that I think we would like to have more people get the COVID-19 vaccine than are currently taking the flu vaccine. That's what you're asking. It seems that over time with the flu vaccine, and, you know, I don't get it every year religiously. I got it kind of miss some sometimes, but I don't get it like I should. I haven't gotten mine yet. I've been kind of reluctant when I found out I had to wait for like 20 minutes in Walgreens to get it, but I still intend to do so, okay? I really am not. I do believe that you should get the flu vaccine, and I think you should get the COVID vaccine when it's available to you. But in the meantime, I'm, you know, happily doing what I've been doing, and it's working so far, staying safe. I'm not really traveling, and I don't work in a high-risk job. So at any rate, it's not as urgent for me to do this. But we would like more people to get the vaccine probably for COVID than we have for the flu, and that may be something to consider, is that, you know, that over time, when you do it year after year, we really do feel like, especially adults that get the flu vaccine, really don't have a they do build up kind of an immunity in general. They don't get flu very often. It is a problem for them. So even if it's actually the flu vaccine isn't as efficacious as these COVID vaccines are, you know, but they work because people continue to take them and they build up an immunity over their lives to this stuff. And that may be what happens with the, you know, COVID is a coronavirus, and coronaviruses are a type of cold virus, and we've been exposed to those. This is just a new, unique one that nobody got exposed to, and it's a nasty one. So this is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo.
W7NAT.
Nate, go ahead, please.
Yeah, even those of us who do take the vaccine, and I should be coming up in about a week now, at age 82, actually, they say that you still should use masks and stay away from people. Can you explain why?
Yeah, I can. I have been studying that one a little bit. Okay, this is the deal. Okay, again, I think I've gone over before how they do these trials. All right, and that when the point of this was to get a safe and effective vaccine. So they set some rules, and they said, okay, if you want to be authorized with your safe and effective vaccine, we need to get you to have at least 30,000 people enrolled in the study, and they need to be you know, split up into random groups, and then we're going to give the vaccine, and however you decide you want to give it in your dose, and then you're going to follow it up, and you're going to see how many people get infected in each group, okay? And actually wait until you get some infections in each group, and when you get a statistically significant number where you can make a comparison and up to, you know, there's formulas to figure this out, but you get enough people, then you can say, okay, how do those two groups compare, all right? And that's the way they did it. And what they decided is that, okay, the endpoint is, do you develop symptoms of COVID, and you get tested, all right? So wait, and when they did that, they found out that, yes, when we do like the Moderna or the Pfizer vaccine, you're seeing like 94% of the people who get the vaccine don't develop any severe illness. They don't die, you know, compared to the 6%. That there are some small number, 6%, that do get a little sick, but, you know, none of them died, right? So anyway, when you compare to the other group, it really is like that, you know, you get like 10 times more people that have problems that didn't get the vaccine, the ones that got the placebo. They ended up having much more problems, right? So you can compare those two groups and say, yeah, the vaccine really made a huge difference in the outcome, okay? But the outcome was just the symptoms and then testing positive, okay? Let me take a drip. All right, so the problem that we're having is the lack of the how complex the study was. If what you're asking is, well, what about, you know, are once we've had the vaccine, can we still get COVID, or do we just, you know, get a bad COVID? You know, can we that those are part of the questions. Can you still carry COVID? Can you still infect somebody else with COVID, you know, even after you had the vaccine? They didn't study that, okay? And then you ask, well, what about all of the people that maybe were asymptomatic? We didn't study them. We didn't test everybody to see, hey, it would have been nice to check everybody that, you know, was in the trial and give everybody tests for COVID and find out how many people had COVID, you know, in both groups. And so that's the thing, is that we didn't look at those people who were asymptomatic and in the group. We just said, oh, well, we didn't see them. So the end result is that we don't really know whether someone who's had the vaccine can still carry it or transmit it, okay? And we also know that there's a time period where after the first shot, you're not done. You have to wait for the second shot and a few weeks after that, and then you're better. That's when it's most effective. So you're asking a question about, well, something that they didn't gather any data on. So that's what we're going to find out. But so in the meantime, we have to just continue doing what we do and watch our numbers go down.
87 OLU.
Yeah, it's KG7GB. Go ahead, Paul.
The New York Times report, and I'll read. By all measures, all five of the vaccines, Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca, Norvac, and Johnson & Johnson, look extremely good. Of the roughly 75,000 people who have received one of the five vaccines in the research trials, not a single person has died from COVID, and only a few people appear to have been hospitalized. None have remained hospitalized for 28 days or more after receiving a shot. To put that in perspective, it helps to think about what COVID has done so far to a representative group of 75,000 adults. If without the vaccine, the COVID has killed roughly 150 of those 75,000 and has sent several hundred more to the hospital. The vaccines reduce those numbers to zero and nearly zero based on research trials. Zero is not even the most relevant benchmark. A typical United States flu season
kills between 5 and 15 people out of every 100, out of every 75,000 adults, and hospitalizes more than 100 people. So the coronavirus vaccine, my opinion is extremely effective in preventing death and long-term health effects. KE7OLU.
Okay, very good. Yeah, that's kind of what I tried to summarize, so I can read directly there. But that's good news, right? That is good news. Now, Manate was just asking, why do we continue to have to wear masks? And the reason is that we don't know whether, when you have been vaccinated, whether you can still carry the virus or pass it on to other people. It may just be protecting those person who's had the shot. And if that were the case, you know, we'll figure this out eventually. But right now, we didn't have time for that. We had to figure out a way to get a shot that protects people. And that's, you know, it's going to be a combination. The vaccine is, I saw a great thing called the Swiss cheese model. Every slice of the Swiss cheese, you know, hides the holes that are in the other Swiss cheese. You know, so, you know, we can come up with a great vaccine, for example. If people won't take it, then it's not going to make it go away, right? Okay. But you know, we can come up with a great mask that might protect you. But, you know, if people don't wear it properly or hold it on their nose, it's the same thing. But, you know, if you start combining these things, we can reduce our risk to ourselves and others tremendously. And that's what we have to do in order to get it under control. So it's good news. And just continue doing what you're doing. Continue wearing your mask. And if you're in the age group, definitely do it. And if you need help, you know, get help to do it, because there's a technical side of this that people are finding out right now. It's not geared up enough, so they're saying, hey, go online and make your appointment, you know. And yeah, for some people that's very difficult. And so they might not get their vaccine because that is difficult. And but keep trying. Try to help your friends if you figured out how to do it. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo.
K4WRM.
Come back again with your call there. I did, wasn't in quick.
Yep, my call is King 4, Whiskey Romeo Mike, Jack. And I just wanted to comment that the VA called me today. I'm in the 85-year-old person. And they said they're going to be calling me in a day or two to set an appointment for me.
Oh, I got you, Jack. You haven't checked into my nut, though. They weren't in my log there. Yeah, it was Kilo 4, Whiskey Romeo Mike. Well, good. So that's kind of what we're hoping, is that, you know, that, yes, once we're really taking this seriously, that everyone will put all out effort to help each other. And the VA is calling people. That is excellent news. So I hope that. So do you have an appointment scheduled then, Jack?
No, they're going to call me. They said in 2 days. They're just they wanted to know if I was willing to take the shot. And I said yes. And they said, okay, we'll call you in a couple of days to set up an appointment.
Okay, very good. That's good news for you there. I'm pleased. So anyway, we got it. We you know, supply chain aside, we just got to push through this. We've got to use up the supplies of vaccine as quickly as we can. Don't waste any. I read another story over the weekend that was kind of interesting, that apparently a group that was going down to Southern Oregon got stuck in the snow, and they had these extra doses of vaccine which were going to go bad that they'd made up. And so they started knocking on the windows of cars and saying, hey, we have vaccine. Do you want it? Don't want to waste it. And they did. So that was good. I mean, we want to make plans to try to get, you know, specific people vaccinated. But in the long run, you know, we don't want to waste any vaccine. We want to get it out there as quickly as possible. That's important. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. I actually talked about COVID for a long time. I wanted to talk a little bit about auxiliary communications. Let's see if there's anybody else who wants to check in tonight. I want to kind of move on from this one and just put a bug in your ear about, the auxiliary communications part of preparedness. So are there any other check-ins at this time?
Kilo Bravo 7, Hotel Lima.
Kilo Bravo 7, Foxtrot Charlie Hotel. Yeah, we'll give a listen tonight.
K6, your Tango X-ray, just listen in.
Okay, there's Dan, Kilo 6, Sierra Tango X-ray. Charlie, Kilo Bravo 7, Foxtrot Charlie Hotel. And Harry, Kilo Bravo 7, Hotel Lima. And Charlie went out searching for one of our radio balloon things and picked one up, right, Charlie?
Yeah, I found that over by Spicer Drive there in Denny School Road. Or no, Tennessee School Road, yeah.
Okay, very good. Yep, well, it can be done, right? It sort of brought the neighbor kids out and had a little adventure. Yeah, we had another one come down today. It came down sort of by, a little bit east of, northeast of Silverton, sorry, between Silverton and Mount Angel, out in the middle of a big field. Didn't go out to find the final resting spot, but it's out there in a farm field again. So someone else can go look for it. Anyway, want to go on a little bit. We last night we had our meeting of our Marion County Amateur Radio Foxcom Aries group, okay? And just a kind of a in situational awareness. Our group has been struggling a little bit with the ability to do the things that we do to train and prepare for being Aries or Oxcom members, okay? And part of that is, has to do with all the other things that are going on, the fires and pandemics and things like that. But our basic, emergency preparedness people are busy, They're a little bit too busy for their volunteer group, and yet we're out there trying to sort of do what we can do, all right? So I guess this is something to be aware of, okay, that our relationship that, you've heard of Aries, you're either in it or not in it, or Races or Mars, all the different groups that are sort of established as communicators that we have heard of, they may have actually a change in their role in terms of what's expected of them and what will their future role be in a future disaster. And part of it right now is that because things are changing, we're kind of looking, just to bring this up as a discussion topic, as to maybe how we can continue to stay prepared and, keep our radio skills up and be of use if and when we're actually needed, even if the people in charge don't necessarily know they need us. So I guess what I'd like to do is get maybe some feedback. If people are, there are other groups, that do radio communications. If you're involved right now in a group and you're happily, making progress still and growing your numbers and you feel like, you're doing a good job, I sure would like to hear from you if you're out there. Maybe you can give us some hints of how to stay ready and useful in the light of changing, government priorities. So I guess, let's get to see if there's any comments out there.
KPF.
Tim, yeah, I know that you've had some things going on with your radio group at the hospital. Again, that they're sort of the hospital sort of focused on other things besides radio use. So what do you have for us there?
Well,
not really the hospital. The hospital decided that as soon as they built this interconnectivity phone system, so essentially a microphone set, I mean like a intercom system, a bat phone system, if you will, that connected the hospitals, they really weren't interested in radios anymore. I'm not even sure if they do the PRA radio net anymore, if Salem is still net controlling for that on Tuesdays or not. No, my observation was more for the Beachy Creek fire. You know, even though all those towns were affected, you know, the resource was there that AT&T came in with their trucks and they set up their repeater towers and then everything was hunky-dory again. And as long as those resources are available, you know, they're not going to be interested in ham radio. It's when the disaster or the situation is widespread enough that there aren't enough trucks to go around, that there are areas getting priority, then I think there'll be people knocking on our doors with their hats in their hands going, hey, you guys can do stuff, can't you? And it's whether or not they'll have the resources to get a hold of us to do that. KS7KVO.
Yeah, so so what you've mentioned there is that we basically, even though the fire seemed like a disaster, it was not a disaster, it was an emergency. And I think I've talked about this before, that, you know, my working definition of an emergency is, you know, something which threatens life or property or health, you know, which requires immediate attention. Okay, that's an emergency. But with emergency is that you have the resources, you bring the resources to deal with the emergency. Okay, as something has to be done, you have the resources. That's an emergency. Now, a disaster is when you don't have the resources. Okay, and that's the thing that we have to. If we talk about the emergency preparedness net, I'm hoping that we can turn any problem into an emergency, not a disaster. When the disaster happens is when you don't have the resources, and it doesn't need to be on a large scale. It could be just your disaster, you know, just a few people out in the wilderness, you know, who are, you know, struck by an avalanche and, you know, they don't have any way of communicating and that's it, you know. But, you know, those who had transponders and prepared for it, you know, then called in help and, you know, help came and saved them, then it's just an emergency, okay? So it really depends on whether you can deliver the resources to where the problem is. And so Tim's point is well taken, that yes, I relied on the cell phone system. The Internet was working fine. We had, you know, yes, bad areas of, you know, that were being destroyed and bad air and things like that. You know, shelters that need to be put up, all that stuff, but it all could be handled just fine as long as they had, you know, could call up the cell phone companies and I suppose the electrical companies and things like that and try to get things brought in and helped, because there were plenty of areas that were still working just fine.
B of E with a question.
Okay, let's see. You have not checked in, my friend. But, Walt, your Kilo Foxtrot 7 Bravo Uniform Victor. Go ahead.
Yeah, so, sorry, it's been going here, and I just now was able to catch the mic. But, Mike, I have a question for Tim. How long did it take AT&T or, you know, at all to get in there and to set up? Because that was a question that came up last night.
You know, Walt, I can tell you that, the fire's really, you know, was Monday to evening into Tuesday. I was out there in the evenings, Tuesday and Wednesday. I was out there all day on Thursday, and I know that AT&T was a presence probably Thursday and Friday. Fairly quickly, you know, they had Detroit and Gates really didn't have any phone comms. You know, the wires were down, and the switching stations, of course, Halls Ridge was down. And so I think it was a day or two for them to bring trucks in from regional trucks in. That's a real rough guesstimate, though.
Okay. So anyway, one of the we're kind of running out of time here, but this is something to think about, though, is that this is if this is recently in their mind and a current leadership will figure, oh, well, the next time we'll just call AT&T or whatever, that's fine, again, if it's just a small thing. But what if it's a big thing, okay? What if it's not fixable in a day or two? You know, that's when maybe we should start thinking about that, you know, like places where there's shelters, that potentially there could be, you know, even just regional communications. We could have easily used our repeaters to help coordinate, say, for example, livestock evacuations that occurred from the canyon. They were bringing them to the fairgrounds, so the fairgrounds really doesn't have a bunch of phones for people to use and things like that, you know. But we wanted to be able to talk. That was one of the objectives was, oh, we wanted to find out whether there's space at all the different fairgrounds for these different animals, and they wanted to be able to move them there. And that's, one little logistic problem. And, you know, the first thing I thought of is get cell phones. Well, you know, we could have had that on the repeater basically in 15 minutes. We could have had people at the fairgrounds all over. There's hams that live around fairgrounds. That could have been set up very quickly. Mobile hams could have arrived and coordinated communicating fairground to fairground extremely quickly with existing systems. But someone has to be able to organize this. Somebody has to be able to deploy us, you know, or ask us to help. If they don't, we can't help. They don't like emergent volunteers. So I guess that's the point I'm trying to make, is that if we're not part of an official group that is kind of being supported by an official organization, a served agency, we may not have an opportunity to train, and we may not be ready when they, when they think that, oh, wow, that's a disaster this time. We can't get AT&T or whatever. You know, then what are they going to do? Well, we still have to be ready, and you got to use this stuff. You got to figure out how to, get people. It's not just going to be nets. That helps. But if you have an idea, or you're happy with your, another organization, how you do this stuff, let us know. That's really the key thing for moving ahead. Okay, so for people who aren't involved in the group, I want to mention something that is, there are two guides that are published nationally. I remember one of the reasons why we have some of the programs that we do is that there was a federal effort, a national effort to kind of standardize the way we deal with emergencies. Okay, and standards, there was something. The Homeland Security, obviously, is in charge of this stuff for us, right? But they have put out a lot of publications which are helpful. So there's the thing that I want you to look up is something called the Auxiliary Communications Field Operations Guide. Now, that's pronounced or spelled OXFOG, which is Alpha Uniform X-Ray Foxtrot Oscar Golf. And it's a document that was written in 2016. That's the latest one. PDF that you can get. You can get it in a variety of formats. Some is a little smaller if you wanted to print it or something. You can get an electronic version of it. It looks like it's available. Maybe I'll put a link to on the Google, group.io thing for this, but it's CSED.gov. It's Charlie India Sierra Alpha.gov. Is publications and then FOG documents. So the CISA stands for Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, which again is probably another U.S. operations part of Homeland Security. Okay, so they have Field Operation Guide. So look up the auxiliary one. We would be called auxiliary communicators. Okay, they have a guide to what you're supposed to do. Okay, and so you should have that, because then you'll know sort of what overall is expected. You can fill out some things on here. There are little forms to fill out, things like that. Ways to self-organize. There's even some designs for antennas you can build yourself from wire and things. in here. So it's a useful thing to have on hand. Now, there's, if you're interested more in the way it works from a governmental level, there's something called the NICFOG, which is the National Guide. The NIFOG, I guess it's called. And that's another one, the National Interoperability Field Operations Guide. That's another one you can download. And then there's a electronic version of that. Okay. So anyway, there are two different documents. The National Guide will tell you the way it works nationwide for these communications plans. Believe it or not, they try to do it the same way everywhere. Okay. And you can help fill in those on the auxiliary guide of the numbers that you know. If you work with certain groups and you've decided, hey, this is what we're going to do, put in your own numbers. So anyway, it just gives you maybe some experience with how it works, how it's supposed to work in an emergency. This is a field operating guide that will get you going. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo.
Kilo.
I'm sorry, that sounded like Paul. Go ahead.
Kilo Echo 7, Oscar Lima, the uniform, Paul. When things happen, you are where you are when it happens. You're not going to go anywhere, so get used to it. You have your own resources. Whatever you have is what you have. Nobody's going to come to help in a broad, wide disaster like an earthquake. The transportation, the communications, everything is down. So you have what you have in your house. So take care of yourself. Take care of your family. Take care of your immediate neighbors. I mean, the people that are adjacent to you. You will have more than you can take care of for the next several days. Just taking care of yourself, your family, and your immediate neighbors. So you need to be aware of what kinds of situations might happen. Have a plan to deal with that. Have a kit, the stuff, to implement your plan. And then practice, coordinate with your neighbors and your family, and take care of yourself. And that will be all you can do for the next several days after a disaster. At that time, 4, 5, 10 days, 2 weeks, by then possibly the local authorities and the federal government will start to have a plan and start to be taking care of things. But immediately within the first 4, 5 days, 10 days, you are on your own. Take care of yourself. Take care of your family. Take care of your immediate neighbors. In order, by having a plan on how to deal with the most likely emergencies, have food, water, and first aid supplies available for you, and take care of what happens within your block or so. And the large recovery efforts will be slow to come. KE7OLU.
K4WIM.
Yeah, Jack, go ahead, please.
One of the things that all hams with their extra equipment or any extra handhelds should have some sort of a Faraday cage built and have that radio equipment in there, because if we have an EMP, we will not have any radios or anything that works. And so those of us who keep spare radios, if you have one in a Faraday cage, you're going to be able to communicate with those who have done such a thing. Any other repeaters or things that you can put in a Faraday cage ahead of time, you have a better chance of having a repeater work as well.
Okay. Well, anyway, we're kind of out of time tonight. Maybe we can follow up on this with some tips and things. But I guess the message from Paul and I still is that perhaps one of the things that we've enjoyed is when there was a push to get this stuff out here and to write all these guides. They do have these great plans, and part of the plans was actually to train and to practice this stuff. And that part of it, in our case, has fallen a little bit to the wayside with all the other things going on. If you have a radio and you stick it away, now you can do what Jack says. You know, if you have a radio that's protected against damage, that's good. But you also have to have a radio that you know how to use, too. So, you know, you either need to pull it out and use it so that you feel comfortable with it. New radios often are a little bit baffling. Someone might hand you one of the new touchscreen Yaesus. You might have no idea how to use it compared to your old, you know, analog Yaesu radio. They're a little bit confusing. So get to know the one you have. They have really cool stuff these days. That's great. But use it, you know, and be prepared, like Paul says, to use what you have, charge your batteries, you know, figure out a way to take care of yourself. But I think, the key is to still practice it. It's not something you can stick in a box and pull out, you know, 6 months from now and depend on it. It's not unless you've trained your whole life with that equipment. So anyway, on that note, I think we need to close the net down. Okay, this time is now 8:12 p.m., and this concludes the 529 Emergency Preparedness Net. Richard likes to make recordings of these, and hopefully we'll have a recording available for you on the WA7ABU groups.io page. Anyway, this NAT meets each Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. on 145.29 megahertz. And our thanks go out to Dan, WA7ABU, for the use of the repeater. Thanks to everyone who checked in today. We had a good group of 21 people. Thanks to those who said bye to allow us to have a clear frequency. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo, now closing the net, and I now return the repeater to normal undirected amateur operations. Stay safe, and we'll see you next time. KG7 GDB.